Hello, listeners, and welcome to the very first episode of Missing and Not Forgotten, the official podcast of the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. I'm Sean Everett, DPAA's Chief of Media Relations and your host. I am very happy to be bringing this podcast to you. It spent many years in the good idea area of the agency's outreach and communications plans until we could finally put it into production. We can't wait to bring you stories of some of the service members we have identified over the years, as well as tell you more about how we make those identifications. Today we're going to talk with Mr. Kelly McKeag. He is DPAA's director, and I want to give him an opportunity to introduce himself. And sir, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sean, it's a privilege to be part of this podcast, the first one. So I have had the privilege of being a part of this unique mission for coming up on 10 years. It was my last role in the United States Air Force, culminating a 34-year career. And it's one that is extremely purposeful, I believe, to be the most meaningful organization within the entire Department of Defense, given what it is that DPA is charged to do. Again, it was a blessing for me to be part of this mission back in 2012. And I, after retiring and doing some private consulting work, I came back in as a civilian, where I've been privileged to lead the organization for the last 7 years.
So the biggest question that people often ask me is, what is DPAA? What do we do, sir?
It's a question that I think everybody that is associated with DPAA gets asked, simply because it's not a very well-known entity. It's not a very well-known mission. I would even submit that it's not even well-known within the Department of Defense. When you think about the numbers of people that come to the agency for the first time and you ask them, had you heard about DPA before? And the answer often is no, this is the first time. So what is DPA? As I mentioned earlier, it's a unique mission set dictated by our responsibility, not just as a Department of Defense, but as a nation, that there are Americans missing from past conflicts, and our role is timeless from the standpoint of searching for, recovering, and identifying individuals who made the supreme sacrifice for the nation in order to provide answers to their families.
So we go out, we find, recover, identify those still missing from our past wars and conflicts. Why is that an important thing for us to do?
It's hugely important, simply because there are multi-tiered responsibilities that we as a nation have. Number one, it's to the service member himself or herself. They made the supreme sacrifice. They answered the call to combat. They dutifully served. And they made their sacrifice with their lives. We also have a responsibility, if not a moral imperative, to their families. And so while these families are Gold Star families who clearly understand, in fact, they know the basics of their loved one's loss. They know the battle they were lost in, the day they died, how they died, and maybe even more historical context. But unlike Gold Star families who may have lost a loved one in Afghanistan or Iraq, there's a compounded effect of the uncertainty attached to it. And for us as human beings, and this is not just unique to Americans, that uncertainty of not having mortal remains within their knowledge or their grasp is something that I think affects these families deeply. And if you speak to families whose loved ones are missing from past wars, they will tell you stories have been passed down generationally. Thirdly, there's also a responsibility to veterans. These are their comrades in arms. And so these are the individuals that served in battle with them, that know the sacrifice and the cost of war. They want to know, and they want their comrades in arms back home, where they belong. And then lastly, it's also a responsibility to those that serve in uniform today. that here we are decades later, still searching, still finding, still identifying. If that signal is given to Sergeant Smith that is serving today, when and if, God forbid, they should ever go missing, there's this comfort, if not assurance within them, that they will be looked after, found, searched for, if necessary, should they go missing.
Absolutely. I know as a veteran myself, that's something that I've talked about before too. Speaking of being a veteran, both of us, we are, who all works for the agency? Is it all just civilians, just veterans? What's the makeup of the agency?
So this is the most eclectic organization I've ever been associated with. We have over 725 individuals, predominantly civilians, about 55%, but 45% military as well. We also have contractors, specialists that we contract with that bring a capability to the organization. We're spread out across the world in 8 different locations, 4 here in the United States and 4 overseas, 1 in Germany, 3 in Southeast Asia. And within this body of 725 individuals, I have never been associated with people that are more passionate about what it is they're asked to do than people assigned to DPAA. Even contractors that are see the unique nature of this mission, that want to be a part of it. And so these individuals range from historians, obviously, who do the initial research, to forensic scientists. These are anthropologists, archaeologists, odontologists, forensic dentists, radiologists, all who help define that last piece of the puzzle, which is the identification. But everything in between that supports the front end of historical research to the back end of forensic analysis are a number of skill sets that contribute to the overall mission. Logisticians, intelligence and analysts, divers, mountaineers, medics, communication specialists, finance personnel specialists. And as you can imagine, this enterprise is multifaceted and needs the contributions from this diverse workforce.
How did those people, all of these people working together, how did they go about accomplishing the mission of DPAA?
Well, you know, it's very linear from the standpoint that these are the hard cases. Obviously, and by the way, we are bounded by, statutorily, we are bounded by World War II, through Operation Iraqi Freedom and all the conflicts in between. And as you can imagine, the numbers are staggering. There are still over 81,000 that are unaccounted from World War II through Operation Iraqi Freedom. And within that, 38,000 are estimated to be recoverable. So these are the hard cases. You know, these are losses from prior wars that had they been found, had they been identified, they would be home by now. And so obviously it begins with research and analysis. That's where, again, we have to pour through records, historical archives, battlefield accounts in order to narrow an area down to a smaller section that we can then send a field investigation team to, again, look at the landscape, maybe look at church records, talk to witnesses, maybe firsthand if we're lucky, but even then pass down by word of mouth. Oftentimes, you know, we'll speak to a landowner who says, yes, my father told me about this particular crash in this particular field. And so for us, again, if that historical research, if that field investigation can narrow it down even further, we will send an anthropologist or archaeologist-led excavation team with which to do the actual forensic work on site. Any evidence that we find, whether they be potential human remains or even material evidence, then comes back to one of two laboratories, one in Nebraska, one in Honolulu, that allow us to then be able to take that evidence, refine it, and hopefully put a name to that evidence, at which point we will then repatriate the remains back to the family.
Speaking of the families, how are they involved in this whole process?
So families, as I mentioned earlier, are crucial to what it is we do. I mean, it is a constituency that we are here to serve. Obviously, we are here to serve their loved one, but their loved one isn't here. And so they're the next contact point for us. And so while our primary mission is accounting for missing individuals, just as equally important is the fact that we are charged with connecting and communicating with their families. And so we do this regularly. We do it either through written correspondence, either through families inquiring of their loved one's case. And most importantly, we do it with face-to-face meetings. We meet annually with the Korean Cold War families in August. We meet annually with the Vietnam War families. And four times a year, we have these family member updates regionally, where we will invite families of a missing American to come and hear about not just the mission itself and receive updates, but also more importantly, to get an update on their specific loved one's case.
We don't do this by ourselves. It's not just the agency. Who are our partners in this mission?
So governmentally, we are incredibly blessed to have, number one, the Armed Forces Medical Examiner System, Armed Forces DNA Identification Laboratory. They are the most preeminent DNA laboratory in the world, bar none. They're located at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. They provide the DNA analysis associated with an identification. And they do it, as I mentioned, with phenomenal capabilities. We also work with the service casualty offices, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps, who help us with the genealogy on a particular loss, finding family members that are eligible to donate DNA with which to compare a set of remains against. And then we also have a partner in the Defense Intelligence Agency called Stony Beach. They are intelligence analysts that are specifically trained, skilled with Vietnam War losses. And they help us with firsthand witness interviews. They help us with analytical work in country for Vietnam War losses. That's the internal governmental side of our partnering. When Congress established DPA in 2015, it also gave us this unique authority with which to establish private partnerships. And we do this with great abandon. In fact, we have 105 of these currently set up. These are universities. These are non-governmental organizations like Scripps Oceanographic Institute out of San Diego. And what these entities do is they bring unique capabilities and capacity, and they run the gamut from both research all the way through fielded excavations. And they help us by doing this work either directly or augmenting what it is we in DPA do. And we've had great success with them in terms of not just helping us with research, voluminous research, but also using cutting-edge technology, capabilities that they may have developed in order to help us, again, do this better, do it faster, and do it more optimally.
So you had said earlier that you've been involved in this mission for well over a decade, so you have to have some cases and some service members that we've identified that stick out to you more. What are some of the most memorable cases that you remember?
You know, Sean, I would have to tell you that every case is memorable. You know, when you think about solving this mystery, when you think about providing answers to families that they have not just lacked, but desperately sought for decades, there is no more rewarding opportunity than that. And so there are a number of cases, you know, whether it's the first Tuskegee Airman that we identified, Captain Lawrence Dixon. You know, to know that he was the first of 27 missing Tuskegee Airmen to be identified. Then to know that his daughter, who was 2 years old when her father went missing, Now she has the ultimate answer that she and her mother had lacked. But then you look at that larger cases like the USS Oklahoma, sunk on December 7, 1941. When the ship was righted 3 years after December 7th, bodies were removed from the ship, turned out to be 429 sailors and Marines. Only 35 could be identified. The rest were buried, unidentifiable, remained in a Honolulu cemetery for over 60 years. We make the case to disinter. They're highly commingled, 13,000 bones. You know, I look at that extraordinary project and the work that our historians and scientists did for that project to then realize that 362 families out of the missing, unknown 394 sailors and Marines were now home. That I find extraordinary. And each of those, you know, it can be a Medal of Honor recipient to an E1 sailor Marine on the ship. Everyone in between, those 362 sailors and airmen and sailors and Marines are now home. I find that extraordinary. And I again, it's just one of many examples of why this mission and the results, the success, the outcomes that we affect have such a profound impact on all of us that you can't help but, A, not come up with a specific story or case, but more importantly, recognize that our contributions to provide these families answers that they've long sought is something that's absolutely priceless.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've been talking about everything that DPA does, who we are, where we go, things like that. Is there anything that we have not touched on that you particularly want to talk about or make a point about?
I think one key point, and I think a lot of people don't necessarily see this right off the bat, is what is this mission in terms of being a tool of diplomacy, a tool of engagement for the United States? And that's where I think you can point back to whether it's working collaboratively, cooperatively with a former enemy like Vietnam, to understand that this mission was instrumental in what today is a very prosperous, very healthy bilateral relationship between Vietnam and the United States. But that would not have happened if there wasn't this initial cooperation by the Vietnamese government, by its citizens, to assist the United States on finding our missing from the Vietnam War. We've been working in Vietnam for 38 years. Now that's one extreme. Just as importantly, it's a tool of engagement and diplomacy for former allies, for allies of the United States. When you look at what we've been able to accomplish with countries that, if not for the United States in World War II or South Korea in the Korean War, they would not have the democracies, the freedoms that they enjoy today. So when you have this people-to-people opportunity, when you have this humanitarian engagement, it speaks volumes. And so in the 45 countries we work in, you have this unique, almost human element that people understand of all nationalities, that when they know they are assisting the United States in this endeavor, not only is there a sense of purpose and a sense of value on their part, but so it is on the United States' part. And so I see this humanitarian aspect of it as transcending what it is on a basic level of what it is we as countries of the world have a responsibility to, again, affect and, more importantly, cooperate on. And I'll give you an example that I think speaks volumes, is China is the only country of the 45 where we actually have losses from four conflicts. In China, there are missing from World War II, Korean War, Cold War, and the Vietnam War. Even in the midst of the bilateral tensions with China, even in the midst of anything else that's happening in the world, we actually have open communications and dialogue with China. In fact, this past January, we had, for the first time since COVID, we had a 7-person team in 2 provinces in China, working with not only the Chinese federal government, but the provincial governments, and more importantly, villagers who willingly wanted to assist the United States on this effort. Later on this year, we will go back and have an excavation in that one of those same provinces, and also an investigation in a northern Chinese province on a Korean War loss. So again, I see this as, again, not just transcending the basic accounting for the missing American, but more importantly, developing relations with other countries. And more importantly, it's people who understand this sacrifice by an American and are more than willing to help us on it.
It's a powerful mission. I mean, I retired from here and then came back. So just like you did, sir. So yeah, I absolutely agree. Sir, thank you so much for joining us for this first episode of what we hope to be a long-running podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us.
My privilege, Sean. Again, you know, this mission, this story tells itself. But if, you know, through your efforts, working with subject matter experts within the agency, for us to be able to amplify it, we can help educate more Americans, more people in the Department of Defense that may not know the extent of what the United States does when it comes to finding its missing from past wars.
Thank you, listeners, for your interest in what we do at DPAA. We hope you'll join us in the coming months as we dive into the stories of those we've identified and talk about the people and science behind those identifications as we fulfill our nation's promise. This has been Missing and Not Forgotten, the official podcast of the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency.